Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and I am profoundly, deeply grateful that you chose to be with me on this 15th day of December 2019. We're going to look at what's real and some very personal and challenging questions towards me that I get from time to time, actually all the time, and maybe they'll help you, I don't know, but they are a part of the quest for insight and truth that most people want to be on or think they're on or don't understand or don't want to be on. I have students that don't want to do it, but they're here anyway, you know. They just say no all the time. It's very, very interesting work that I do. Anyway, I'm grateful you chose to be with me. I want to remind you that we're in our fundraising drive. Our mystery donor is being extremely generous and kind, as he always is with us. And he is matching donations, as you know. And if you become a sponsor, he will match that. If you give a year-end donation, he will match that. And all of your donations go to serve humankind in all sorts of different ways. Hospice, the BATMO Project, my work constantly with people who are, what do I want to say, challenged financially and emotionally. You help in many, many different ways. And all of these things matter. They count in the whole genre of world peace and trying to create just a little pocket where people can awaken and spend some time in inner awakening. It's all very, very important. I do far more than I'm talking to you about right now, and it doesn't matter. If you see the goodness in Aspire, in our programs, our radio, TV, everything that we do here, I hope that you will become a sponsor and help us sustain our efforts. It's very, very important that you're there. If you're interested, go to the website at aspire.org, aspire.org. Just hit the splash page there, and it'll tell you all about year-end donations, what your gift does, where it goes, and how it helps humankind in a very interesting way. What is reality? What is real? That's an interesting question. If you look it up in the dictionary, it means actually existing as a thing or an occurrence in fact, not imagined or supposed. Well, that leaves a lot of doors open, doesn't it? I mean, what my reality is may not be what your reality is. And maybe that's our problem, yours and mine. We don't see each other's reality. We only see our own. And if I see your reality bent on my reality, then all of a sudden this turns into supposition and opinion. Another definition, used to emphasize the significance or seriousness of a situation or circumstance. Okay, I can buy that there, you know, to emphasize significance or seriousness. Yeah, I can go that way. But once again, the reality of a given situation is based on the premise of my interpretation of my DNA, which is saying to me constantly, Greg, you have to survive. Greg, you have to survive. Greg, you have to survive, that kind of thing. And then you have the supposition of my imagined concepts in my mind, how my mind works, how it logifies things. So basically, the reality of any given situation is based in the supposition of my own ego. And if you look at it from that point of view, then you kind of get it. So here is the questions that I have been given, and I hope I answer them to the satisfaction of the questioner. The first one, Greg, can you tell me what real is? And this is from Linda in Los Angeles. She's always very generous with her questions. What is real? Well, it depends on the illusion maker that you're in at the time. Most people go, all of us, in one way or another, go to our intellect. And my intellect is connected to my emotionality, and my emotionality is connected to my DNA the, you know, hip bones connected to the, you know, tailbone, that kind of thing. So there isn't a lot of quote unquote reality. I don't really believe that the definition that we have here of reality in the dictionary is authentic. It's not to me some actually existing as something that occurs as a fact, not imagined or supposed. All of my reality is supposed. My reality as a man is different than a reality of a woman. My reality as a man in Western culture is different from someone in Eastern culture. Or, you know, it just goes on and on and on with this body thing and what our bodies experience and what our genetics have been over the many centuries of our existence. So it's really hard to say. So, Linda, I'm just going to say this to you. The only reality I have found is love. That is all I know. I have this experience of just plain love. It's not about what's right. It's not about what's wrong. It's not about what's good. It's not about what's bad. It is just love. This love is not emotional. It is not psychological. It is not physiological. It is just love. And I don't know any better way to say that to you, because there are no words for the direct experience of having love and recognizing it in everything. If this is truly a love fest, spiritually speaking. So to see this love that I speak of, you have to go into your own spirituality. It can't be a philosophy, and it can't be a religion. So love is the reality of its own existence in this lifetime, and whether or not you or I or anyone can recognize this love and realize it for what it is the essence and the meaning, the significance of a person's lifetime. Now, most people aren't going to do this. They're not going to go into that. They can't make their home in that. People are looking for advantage. They're looking for what is right, what is good, what makes things right and good in their life and proper and all that other good stuff that they like to believe is necessary. So this is really, really important for you to understand. The reality of our given situation here is that we have karma, and this karma was manufactured and obtained and attained through many different lifetimes, many different experiences. We're building it now, and these karmic traits that we have, like genetic traits, are what really this lifetime is all about, and that's what's real. What I have to face in my karma is important. Now, karma is not a bad thing, and I don't want you to think that karma's bad, because it's not. Karma is not a bad thing. Karma is the teacher, the essence of why we are here, how we got here, what we will experience in our fate and our destiny. It has nothing to do with being punished or having bad things happen. If I follow my karma, if I can listen to my karma through the state of love that lives within me, karma opens up the door to every beautiful thing that could ever happen. It will bring me to love. It will bring me to compassion. It will bring me to beauty. It will bring me to everything that is sufficient unto my lifetime, bringing me into compassion and love, and eventually into the awakening. But until that happens, until I am willing to recognize all that, see all that, allow for all of that, all I will do is go through many, many difficulties. I make a karma arduous. I'm the one that makes it difficult because I move against it or I deny it or I won't see it. This is why our life is like a glass ceiling or like feeling stuck in a cul-de-sac. We have all these things that we are facing time and time again, over and over and over again. Survival, jobs, children, mates, friends, not friends, circumstances, conditions that we blame on our body, we blame on time. But really, they're my karma. And I must look at them for what it is and open myself up to this. Life is a soldron. It is not to be considered a condition. You can make your life a condition if you want. You can make it ugly. You can make it whatever you want. But if you do those kind of things, you make your life difficult. So what is real? Well, it depends on the level of your love, your ability to see that beautiful love. It depends upon your opinions, your ideals, your philosophies, all the blocks you get and put in the way of your life. Everything that you believe in is a detriment to what's real. Everything. The more you believe, the more of a detriment you will have. And the more the authentic, which is what I call the real, becomes blurry. When you and I are willing to give up our religious beliefs, our philosophical beliefs, our scientific beliefs, our personal beliefs, when we're willing to give those up for the sake of a greater experience than those conditions can offer us, that's when it clicks. What can I say? But you're going to believe in believing because that's what everybody tells you to do. And it's passionate. And that's what people want. Get out of there, Greg. I hope that helps you, Linda. Please forgive me. Namaste. This passion thing, not very helpful. Okay, here's the next one from Stan in San Diego. I don't believe in Buddha or in Jesus. So that being said, they did not help the world, in my opinion. Do you really think you are, Stan? Stan, I don't know. You know, does this radio program help you? Does my TV programs help you? Do my discourses, do my time at a hospice help? What helps people? That's a question that is relative only to a person's reality, your reality. You mean not to believe in the Buddha or Jesus or Lao Tzu or any great spiritual master that touched the earth. I'm okay with that. That if you were trying to upset me or insult me, you didn't, because I understand. But the thing that is important is how you perceive anything from the reality of your mind, your beliefs, your psychology. I don't know what your psychology is. If it's like the pedestrian mentality that just doesn't believe in anything, I don't believe in this, I don't believe in that, blah, 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 prove it to me, then okay, that's all right. You can live that way and just keep doing it. I say keep doing it. Just keep thinking that way, believing in that way, doing that kind of thing. Just keep it up. Keep going and going and going with it. Eventually, in some lifetime or another, you might find that all of that helps you. It won't be in this lifetime at all. When I hear people say these things to me, I always wonder, you know, it's like the little kid that says, you know, I don't want to believe in Santa Claus. I don't believe in Santa Claus, da, 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 to try to get his parents to confess that they are Santa Claus. So I don't know what your motive is, and I don't find that your motive is counterproductive. It could be very productive if you used it correctly. But if you don't believe in something, it means that you have a prejudice towards it. You have to be open to Buddha, Jesus, Lao Tzu. You have to be at least open to that. If you don't believe in them, like you say, and you don't see the value of them, you don't see the value of them. You must have a philosophy about what is valuable. And that's what you should be looking at, not the Buddha or Jesus or me. You need to look at it and say, what are my values? What is the criteria of my values? What is it that I can understand and accept and experience and appreciate? You have to go there. If you don't go there, then you have nothing. You got nada. So I say to you, what is your value system and how do you evaluate whether or not something is real or not? Now, let's go to Greg. Is my work valuable? Only to the people I'm able to help. To the people that don't understand me, that don't understand what I do, how I work, the way I work, that don't understand the love that I feel for them, to those people, no. And I'm not here to dance around that issue for them, to try to convince them. My job is not to convince you. My job is, when you're ready, to free you, to liberate you through love, through compassion, through meditation, through direct experience. And if you're not willing of that, which 99% of the public isn't, then nothing I would ever say would be of great value. Most people, when they're listening to a radio program or watching my TV program, have no idea what they're watching and what they're listening to, much less understand a single word I'm basically talking about. It blows my mind all these years, people not understanding. They don't understand anything more than if you put something in your mouth and it tastes sweet, it's good. If you put something in your mouth and it's sour, it's bad. That's about as far as people go. So the object of the effort here, the game of life, is to be able to be open to the things that might awaken you. Now, if you don't believe in awakening or that you can be awakened or that it is necessary to awaken, then once again, you're at your own cul-de-sac. People like me don't sound logical. We don't sound real. We don't sound normal. We don't sound any of that. We just sound like we sound. So this is the major key that most of us miss in the course of our lifetime. I'm not here to tell you what's real. I'm not here to convince you of what I'm doing is real. I'm not here to do that, so you really must understand that. I'm here to share with those who have eyes to see and ears to hear that which is what I'm working on or what you're working on, whether you know it or not. And it's really easy work. I don't find it difficult at all. You just drop your perceptions. You don't act on your inclinations, your impulses. You just don't do it. You live in love at all costs, and that's how you live, with love in your heart and doing those things that make love possible. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less. And once you understand that, can appreciate that, can live in that, that's when the goodness and the mercy of love just overflows. So my work, is it valuable? Depends on who you talk to. You know, if I help this person, if there was a person who needed a lifeline and I gave it to them, yeah. If there's a person who didn't want to be saved or didn't want that lifeline, no. If you wanted a sugar cookie and I gave you an apple, I probably didn't satisfy you, did I? That's the way it works. It is not for me to evaluate my value to you. That is all something that is circumstantial and relevant only to your value system. And I am not responsible for your value system at all. I can tell you this, though, Stan. Honest to goodness, things that you give people out of the sake of love usually are very much unappreciated. Things you give people for the sake of human love are very much valued. We take what should be first, and we make it last. And we take what is last, and we make it first. Good question, Stan, and thank you. Please forgive me. Namaste. And the last question from Carrie. I don't know where Carrie lives. What is the meaning of your work? What value do you have in this world as a teacher, Carrie? Again, Carrie, it all depends on where you're listening to me from. If you're listening to me from your parents, from your genetics, from your DNA, from your psychology, I don't know how valuable I could be. I really don't. My value as a person, as a spiritual teacher, is not contained in the common pedestrian mentality. I'm not here to serve the purposes of your survival. I am not doing that at all. I'm here to serve the purposes of the meaning of your life. Your life. And if you equate your life to survival, then you and I have a huge, huge canyon between us. Like, really big. Grand Canyon type of thing. We're way apart. But if you can understand that you're on the verge, the essence, the edge of a great experience that is beyond the concepts of human thinking, beyond the concepts of the human ideals, beyond the quote-unquote reality of good and bad, right and wrong. If you can get beyond that, if you can be beyond that, that is when the goodness and the mercy of love, of the meaning of my work, can touch your life in many, many different directions. I don't try to be meaningful in people's lives. I don't even try to be relevant. I meet a person where they are, and when they ask for help or need help, I give them what they need. They may not like what they need. They may not agree with what they think I'm giving them that they need. But I don't argue with it. It is just the way. I know what I needed when I was there. I know what I did when I was in their predicaments. And I understand how it all works. And I appreciate it. And I offer a hand to those who can receive it. But those who are takers, well, there's an old story about the Mullah Nasruddin. The local priest was caught in a ditch, and everybody was trying to get him out of the ditch, and people would say, give me your hand, give me your hand. But he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't give them his hand to get out of the ditch. Finally, the mullah walks up to them and says, "Take my hand, Reverend." Immediately, he grabbed his hand and he was out. People said, "Well, we said, give us your hand," and he wouldn't do it. He said, "You don't say give to the Reverend, you have to say take, because that's what he's all about." And that's the way people generally are. They take, they don't give. So if you're of the ilk where you are a taker and not a giver, if you're of the ilk that you need to have certain things to make you happy, then you miss. And of course, I'm one of those people that you have to give me your hand in order for me to help you. And that's just the way it is. I'm out of here. Thank you for your beautiful question, Carrie. I'm out of here. Have a beautiful day. Make a donation to Aspire. Keep us on the air. I hope that you will become a sponsor and really make a difference in the lives of many people. Have a beautiful day. Please forgive me, huh? Namaste.